Hi everyone, thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Respectfully Disagree. So this week, once again, we're going to do an intense pop culture breakdown like we did with 10 Things I Hate About You a few episodes ago. So lately, there's been a lot of conversation about race, representation and diversity in pop culture. A lot of it has to do with controversies around canonical or historical characters being portrayed by black actors, right? Like we saw in the case of the show The Rings of Power. But while this debate keeps going on in circles, we thought, why not look at what actually happens when we see representation, particularly representation of brown characters on screen? Does it really help in the larger scheme of things? So we're going to talk about one of the most popular shows which sort of reimagines, brown characters and reimagines what the lead of like a teenage drama show looks like. That's Never Have I Ever, created by Mindy Kaling. So let's start by asking everybody, does Never Have I Ever get brown representation right? Yes or no? This is Shrishti, your host, by the way.
Okay, hi, I'm Denise. And I do not think it gets it right. But I have to admit very embarrassingly that I have like binged watched both seasons, and in fact when the second season came out, I kept all the good shows that I was watching aside to watch that. And it does not get it right, but it's like so addictive, and I just couldn't stop watching.
Hi, this is Rohita, and I'm a little bit on the fence about this, because on the one hand I'm like, yeah, it doesn't get it right. On the other hand, I'm like, I don't think any show can get it right per se. And my issue is predominantly with the way that the show is discussed and dissected outside, as in like in reviews and all the rave reviews about it, and how, oh my God, this is such a win for South Asian culture, South Asian diversity and representation. Like that discourse is what I have a problem with, not so much the show itself.
Okay, so to tackle this representation question, let's start off by playing a game to unpack some of the moments in the show that dealt with desiness and what we felt about them. So to start off with, what about Nalini and Kamala's accents?
So it's, on the one hand, yes, there is something wrong with it, because again, it homogenizes the idea of what an Indian accent should be. But also, there's nothing wrong with it because there is no one Indian accent, so... so what if this one comes off sounding a bit silly and caricaturish? The criticism of these accents is that they're wrong. They're not like correct Indian accents. But what is a correct Indian accent?
Initially, I was like, when I first came to know that these people don't actually talk like that. Like, again, you know, I didn't want to, when I heard it, I was like, something sounds different. But again, I did not want to say that, oh, you know, this is not Indian enough, or things like that. So, you know, when I went back and actually heard the actor speak, or like came across interviews and things like that, I was like just kind of taken aback. But I didn't really think of it much, because ultimately, I mean, they are of Indian origin, right? So,
all right, let's take another example, right? So there's a Ganesh Puja in the first season. The characters are all Savarna Hindus, and the show portrays their rituals. So far, so good, right? But does it portray these rituals as quintessentially Indian? And is there something wrong with that?
Yeah, I think it does. It's this very typical like whitewashing of culture, as like where upper caste Hindu culture is portrayed as Indian culture. And it's like almost exoticized.
In terms of like, you know, the rituals and things like that, I think I fast-forwarded that bit. I was like, there's no way I want to watch this on screen. But I, one particularly during those like celebrations, what I picked up was like the clothing and the the very like heavy emphasis on like saris and like salwar kameez and things like that, which was actually emphasized a lot. Like even in the dialogues, everybody kept mentioning like how good somebody looks in a sari or how good somebody looks with a bindi and, you know, stuff like that. All that is like packaged as culture and not so much as religion, where I feel like that becomes a huge problem, and that like contributes to this homogenizing this an entire country, basically.
Yeah, that's definitely really interesting. And finally, let's talk about like a very controversial aspect of the show, which was the arranged marriage plus strict mom plots, right? So does the show deconstruct stereotypes or does it add to them?
I feel like throughout the show, there was some level of like rebellion in this area. They did show like Kamala, going against her grandmom's wishes and, you know, somewhat making peace with the fact that her grandmom is going to be upset and things like that. But that also resolution wasn't really something that really critiqued this whole arranged marriage process or anything. It was seen more as like the grandmother's character is only like this. The grandmother's character is only such that she wants something more. She wants this for her granddaughter, and it's packaged as she wants what's best for her granddaughter, which ultimately is this arranged marriage, according to her. And yeah, it's not seen as like a structural issue. It's seen as a one-off thing, which is where I think the problem lies.
Yeah, like I agree with that, because this whole arranged marriage and strict parenting thing, they are like quite weighty, but they're played off as these cute cultural quirks, like, oh, brown families, arranged marriage, haha, it's cute. Like, I don't know, the cutesifying of it didn't sit well with me that much. As in, there's so much more wrong to marriage itself and arranged marriage on top of that. That has nothing to do with like, do you love this person or not? It has to do with marriage as an institution and all of that. So that's the thing. It thinks it is critiquing these things and deconstructing the stereotypes, but it's actually not, I thought.
Yeah, I think that's definitely very interesting. And actually that brings up a broader question about the reception of the show, right? And its claims about representation. And I think one of the things is that there was a lot of this being a great show because for the first time you see, a brown girl in the lead in a teenage comedy drama, etc., etc. But there's also like criticality about whether it accurately, like we've been talking about, represents the Indian experience. So how about we discuss a few reviews of the show and talk about how we feel about them? Starting with our very own Swaddle's review, written by Paroma Soni. So she said, the show lacks nuance or complexity when it comes to dissecting what it means to be Indian. Instead, it relies on a very basic modern versus traditional approach, rife with unchallenged cliches, hiding behind its self-congratulatory wokeness. So what are our thoughts on this take? Agree, disagree, want to add to it?
So again, I'm confused about this because for me, I kind of agree and I see what is being said over here. But at the same time, I'm just like, who can really dissect what it means to be Indian? There is no one definition of what it means to be Indian. And like, this is typical NRI Desi culture, which we all know and love to hate. And I mean, we cringe watch it because we love to hate it. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's making a claim to Indianness. It's just making a claim to diaspora Indianness, which as we know is anyway very like upper class, upper caste Hindu sort of culture. So I don't know. Like, my question is, can any show be truly like capturing Indianness? I don't know.
So definitely, like, for the sake of the show, it is something that you mindlessly watch. But in terms of whether it is Indian and like it represents a whole country, that is for sure not the case. It does not even address any kind of like intersectionality in the characters' identities themselves, let alone like bringing in any other identity separate from the ones that they were talking about already.
For me, I think one of the things about representation which is so complicated is because is that the categories are so broad, you know. Marketing is that, hey, it represents all of you, but actually it'll end up representing a small sliver of you. And I think that's the case with, in fact, anything where we ask for representation. And I think that's where the complexity sort of comes in. Okay, should I move on to another review? So this is kind of maybe countering our critiques of the show. So let's see what we feel about that. So this was a review published in Livewire, by written by Riya Bhatia. And she says that the main issue with critiques of the show is that it is being held to an incredibly high standard, like all art created by people of color is. So do you agree with this, that because it's being held to a high standard and all these conversations are happening because, hey, it's a show by a brown woman starring a brown woman and like supposedly talking about the Desi American experience?
It's true enough that when we watch other shows where it's written and performed by predominantly white actors, we don't interrogate whiteness, and especially considering that whiteness itself is a structure of power, we don't interrogate that. We instead interrogate shows like Never Have I Ever, which is supposed to be a silly, like, fun teenage drama, as like this whole representation, subaltern cultures, decolonization, all these big, big words. When you don't have to, I mean, take it that seriously. In fact, it would just be a lot more impactful if people just took it for granted and they were like, yeah, I mean, this is a teenage drama that happens to star predominantly brown people.
I do agree with this critique to an extent. I do agree that, you know, probably because it is written by a brown woman, there is so much of scrutiny. But at the same time, I think it's also important to ask, like, why this scrutiny is there. It's also because, like, there's so few brown women in, like, mainstream media that there is this, like, whole lot of expectation on these few women to, you know, perform and represent and, like, do everything to the T and impress everybody, which is why that scrutiny is, like, amplified so much, and we hold them to a very, like, unrealistic standard to represent each and every Indian, which is, you know, as like we spoke about, is not possible.
I mean, honestly, I wish that everybody is held to an incredibly high standard, because I think it's when we have those conversations that, you know, the needle really moves ahead. And like, it's when you start by saying, okay, representation, then you realize, okay, but these are the problems with this. Then you realize, but okay, it's in crafting the story, maybe, that you need to invest more and that you need to hire different people, have a research process, you know. So I feel like it's like asking one question that leads to the other, that leads to the other. So I do think we need to ask those questions. But I don't think that they shouldn't be held to this high standard. I think like everybody should be held to this high standard. Okay, on that note, let's talk about our last review before we move on. So this is a review that was published in The Independent, a UK or British newspaper. And it's written by Anmol Irfan. So she says, representation for our community is so rare that it's easy to pin all our desires for relatability onto any brown girl we see on screen. But that has to change. So what are our thoughts? I think this kind of echoes a lot of what we've already sort of spoken about, right?
I agree with this 100%. Because I mean, we need more people. We need more brown women on screen, and not just like this, you know, this one idea of brown women. Like, we need thousand brown women and more than that on screen. The only way to like overcome something like this and like to overcome that this unrealistic expectation is to, if we see a rise in like volume, and if we only see a rise in volume, do we see the scrutiny being distributed and not like concentrated on one person?
The other thing for me is also like, when we're talking about representation, what are the terms of, like, who set the terms of this conversation at all? Like, whom do we want to be represented to, right? Like, it's always like, we want to be represented as a country in a global space or whatever, when we really mean like to an American audience or to like a white audience. It's kind of like, to a white gaze, you want to kind of represent yourself, and that automatically means you homogenize a lot of aspects of what it means to be Indian. It just becomes like this monolithic thing that completely flattens all nuances, right? Because when we talk about representation, again, it's not like, I mean, we have so many regional film and like TV industries in our country itself. So we're not engaging with ourselves. We're engaging with an audience we want to feel seen by. And that I think is like a little problematic that deserves some kind of scrutiny.
So, I mean, Rohita, I think that's a really interesting point. I just wonder, like, how does it play out, you know? And it's interesting that when we counter the global north with industries from the global south, we're saying, look, we have so much variety and we have so many regional film industries and everything. But within that, again, there's like, who dominates those stories, who tells those stories, how much representation do you see in terms of caste, in terms of class, in terms of skin color, in terms of within those stories also, you know? So I'm just wondering, that is even the solution that?
So for me, it's like, the more I'm like, the more time we're spending on this episode, the more I'm realizing that my issue is not actually with, it's actually with this whole conversation about representation itself. Because even in this review, it's like, representation for our community is so rare. But it's like, rare where exactly? It's rare in Western media and like in Hollywood and in the big studio headquarters. Like, as in, it's not that we need to shoehorn ourselves into the kind of media that is being created and produced in the global north, but instead question the hegemony of that form of media over the rest of the world. So, because there are huge industries, even like, I mean, we've had a lot of like conversations and articles and videos about the fact that the regional film industries in India are massive, and the kind of the number of films and TV shows that come out every year just from one regional language industry is huge. And it's the same with like Nollywood is a huge industry in Nigeria. And as in, what I'm trying to say is, there is representation everywhere. There's just not representation in like a white supremacist form of like industry, right? Like, so I think that's my main issue.
I agree that even with representation in the West, like, it's a conversation being had because the Indian American community has a lot of money and has a lot of power and has a lot of influence. So they can have that kind of space and that kind of voice. At the same time, even the anti-racism and the struggles there are also real in terms of perception. So I just wonder, like, how do we kind of balance it out? Because I don't think that it's as easy as like, put a woman behind the camera, or put a woman with, like, give a pen to a woman and you suddenly have, like, you know, feminist stories. You have a Farah Khan who's made like Mehuna and Om Shanti Om, and honestly, I love these films, but like, in terms of, let's look at the representation conversation and like gender and everything, I don't really think she's doing anything for that, you know what I mean? But I do think that what people can be held accountable for is that within their storytelling universe, maybe there's more criticality, and there needs to be much more that needs to go into the research and writing processes, which currently I feel like are not as robust, at least what we know of them from the outside, right?
No, I 100% agree, because like, it again is like murky territory. For example, with this movie RRR, it has become huge. Like, everyone was watching it all over the world, and it was discussed in Western media, which we saw as a victory, but it's not necessarily the case, of course, because it's so it has so much Hindutva messaging, and it's extremely virulently caste is, like caste erasure, full of caste erasure. And even looking at the local power dynamics involved in the making of that film and the actors and the stars, like all of that are conversations that were completely missing because it became this global phenomenon. I just feel a little tired of this representation conversation in the context of, like, you know, Netflix shows that are popular in the, like, that have, like, mainstream, like, on a global level, mainstream success, because there's so much work to do at home itself. Like, again, I also don't have any answers, and I'm wondering what the point is when we talk about representation so much. Like, what are we even trying to achieve? But I see that there are some arguments to be made about how representation is important, even in like Western media, because obviously, especially in the context of rising anti-Asian hate crimes and things like that, it's really important to normalize. But I don't know. I feel like it just goes in circles, to be honest.
So in the case of Never Have I Ever, it was made by Mindy Kaling, who is an NRI, and it was made for the NRI people, and like it catered to the white gaze. So in this case, would you say that it represented the kind of caste and class and section of people that it was supposed to?
I feel like yes and no, in a way that, again, I don't want to put the onus on this one show to get everything right, because that's too much of a burden for anyone. But also, we are now increasingly entering into an era where a lot of media and art is becoming a lot more self-aware, especially when they come from places of power, when the stories are told from places of historical or structural privilege. That self-awareness is very, very key and very important. But I still feel like with NRI Indians, there is still something of a like victim complex that they have. And so they don't interrogate what it means to be an NRI Indian. It's just very uncritically looking at the physicality of being a person with different colored skin in a white supremacist majoritarian country, and that's it. But it's not like interrogating what is the economic position that NRI Indians occupy in America, and what are the material realities of NRI Indians in America, and what are the structures that they engage with. Like, there's no that level of self-awareness or critical like introspection. I'm not asking the show to do that. I'm just saying that there's still, in the conversations about the show, this victim complex that's guiding the celebration of a show as like it's a win for us South Asians, without questioning like which South Asians actually get to live in a suburb in big cities in California. I think was it California? I don't know where they live in Never Have I Ever, but yeah, in like a very posh suburb and go to a good school and have the same kind of lifestyle as everybody else. Like, which South Asians get to do that, and who, it's a win for who exactly in that sense? There isn't any conversation about that. So that's what it goes back to, what I was saying in the beginning, the discourse around the show. There's still like a very glaring lack of self-awareness, I feel.
So, okay, Rohita, tell me something, and Denise also, as in I'm just asking you because you just made this point, which is, how do you kind of balance out the need for this, you know, criticality in conversation with ultimately the fact that entertainment is a business and it's about what people want, right? You're probably getting this, not probably, definitely getting this representation because now there's a lot of demand and you understand that there's a market for it, which is great. It works in the US, it works in India, it works out really well for you overall in many South Asian countries. And so you're doing this show, right? You're not actually doing it to look into the nuances of representation, into any of these things that we've spoken about.
I have no idea, Shishi. Yeah, well, I think with the main issue that I see is that the danger in this conversation is that representation and diversity is such a, it's kind of like a buzzword now. It's like you said, tokenistic, that it actually is good business. Like, representation and diversity makes for good business. And then it feels like the job is done. Like, we have achieved representation. It's over. Bye. Our work here is done. Like, that's what is dangerous for me, because it's like we have stopped the conversation exactly when we were supposed to dig in a little deeper and like pick apart this idea of who is being represented and why are we asking for representation. None of that is happening. It's because the conversation is so dominated by people who want to be seen and be present in white dominated spaces, which is like, as in, even if you're talking about this particular show, like Never Have I Ever, upper class, upper caste, NRI Hindus, who are likely to have been audience members in the Howdy Modi event, you know, like, these are the kind of people who are being represented, and we're celebrating that, and then it's celebrated as a win, and then the conversation ends. So that's what I see as the trouble. Like, I know the fact that it does make for good business now is where the trouble is, actually.
And also, I adding to that, I feel like the whole idea of like representation and like when people use representation to get like brownie points is that they want their audience to see them as like see them as like cool and edgy. cool and edgy and like, you know, very in sync with the world today and like the discourse around these things today. But that's their goal. Like, that's their goal, is to be viewed like that. It's not to actually create any ripples or like question anything further. So like, when the intention is coming with so much of like carelessness, it's difficult to actually think of whether these questions of like representation will ever go any deeper than what it has right now.
But you know, on that note, let's talk a little bit about what we feel about Desi representation, even outside of Never Have I Ever, right? Like, what do you feel about like the business around and who you end up seeing as the people occupying South Asian stardom space in across the globe. So, you know, there's Priyanka Chopra, Mindy Kaling, Zayn Malik, Riz Ahmed, Aziz Ansari, etc., etc. When I say across the globe, I clearly mean mostly the global north, and so they have like global value, right? What do you think about the South Asians that we do end up visibilizing as being like Desi and as being the ones representing Desi-ness?
So I feel like, and this is not just the case with, you know, these select few, but in general, like when we look at like marginalized populations and communities, and not to say that Priyanka Chopra and all are marginalized, but I'm talking about like Indians and like white spaces and things like that, like the onus fully like comes on to them. With Priyanka Chopra and all of, you know, these celebrities especially who wear brownness as a badge, it feels like they are, you know, have taken it upon themselves to do this quote-unquote education work.
So while we were talking about this, there's this book by a philosopher, Olufemi Taiwo. It's called Elite Capture, and it talks about this idea of identity politics and how this idea of representation has taken over as a form of social justice politics, and how it has led to a situation where we're kind of like fighting for and advocating for more people to be represented in rooms of power, rather than questioning those rooms of power itself. The fact of the matter is, Priyanka Chopra is still part of the elite. She is very privileged. She is in no way marginalized. But because of this whole cult of brown South Asian representation, we we just lose sight of that fact and don't even question whom we're allowing to represent us and what we're okay with and where the conversation stops.
Yeah, and I think that cuts to the heart of the issue that we've been sort of talking about, are the problems with representation and how it doesn't force us to question structures, but it just talks about like representing people almost in powers of oppression, you know, to be the oppressors. I think that's a great note to end on, because it very powerfully points out a lot of the things that we've actually been talking about and the issues with how we look at representation versus actual structural change in storytelling. So on that note, we hope we've given you a lot to think about post-binging, while binging, or just not binging the show at all, but thinking through representation debates regardless. We put the brown in brownie points. Okay, on that note, see you again next time. Bye.
This podcast is brought to you by TS Studios, the production company that brings the Swaddle's creative point of view to original podcasts and films.